most memorable basketball song?
Can I sing it?
We're playing basketball. We're playing basketball.
Rick Bucher.
But Sweet George Brown, I mean, when you think of basketball, and I wonder, because we are of a vintage age, if somebody in their 20s, do they connect with that?
This is the BJ Armstrong and Rick Bucher Show, starring BJ and Bucher.
Welcome to the latest edition of the BJ and Bucher podcast. I am Rick Bucher. He is BJ Armstrong. And you know, oftentimes the best show is the pre-show and what it took to get to this point and what I had to go through. BJ Armstrong has been traveling, and you ever had that friend? You ever had that friend where you're going to do something together, and let's say you're going to go to a concert. You buy the tickets, you arrange the limo, and you might even figure out who your dates are going to be. And then you call your buddy and say, hey, look, I got this all lined up. And he goes, cool. And then you get there and he's like, man, you have no idea, man, what I had to do to be able to be here today. That's kind of what we went through with BJ Armstrong.
I feel right now.
And not myself, but along with our trusty producer, Shane Freeman, we've been putting up with a lot of flack. BJ, thank you so much for just joining us. We just appreciate your presence.
I feel like this is a subliminal diss.
There's nothing subliminal about it, man. I'm coming right at you because you've been chewing on me for like the last half an hour.
Oh, you know, that's what friends do. It's all love here. It's all love. Let's get to it.
Because there is plenty already in this season that is only a week old. It feels as if a lot of storylines have begun in a big way. And let's start with Anthony Davis, who kicked off the season with a bang. Obviously, has been injured over the last couple of years. Hasn't been able to stay healthy.
Yep.
For full disclosure, also a client of the Wasserman
Group. Yes, he is.
That's never stopped me from being critical of him, which the Wasserman Media Group is not happy about. But that said, 95 points in his first two regular season games. He's the only player to score more than 90 points in the first two games of the season since Michael Jordan dropped 91 to start the 86-87 season. So, this is the thing. As soon as we bring up Michael Jordan, we're in trouble, right?
It's Air Jordan.
Everything now is a Michael Jordan reference. We got him somehow in the show. Nothing was done. Basketball was not played until Michael Jordan played it. Now there's a Michael Jordan reference. So what does this mean, Rick? Where are you going with this?
Well, obviously he's in the circle of Michael Jordan. He could be Michael Jordan. He could win championships. Isn't that what it means?
Well, the funny thing is we didn't know Michael Jordan when we saw him.
Yes. Well, and how many of these, and by the way, 86, 87, he wasn't winning championships back then.
It was Magic Johnson and Larry Bird.
And whatever he was doing in 86, 87, and whatever the Bulls were doing, wasn't good enough to win championships.
This is correct. So, Anthony Davis has scored 95 points.
Yep.
Okay. So, what are we saying?
We're saying that he started the season off really well, and he's capable of scoring. This is the frustration with me, and we've got so much to go to. I'm going to leave it at this. I've always felt he's capable of this. He's capable, actually, I feel as if he's capable of more. When Russ Westbrook is scoring 50-plus and a triple-double, I feel if Anthony Davis is not only able to put up those kind of numbers, but he should be able to put up winning numbers. And that's the heart of it for me, BJ. If you're not winning, if you put up 50 and you lose, I don't know how you feel about this, but I have a hard time with like giving that as much credence. Am I wrong on that?
Well, here's the thing. Anthony Davis, without questioning, is a major, major talent. The game now is set up for offensive players to have a huge advantage over the defense. There's no more hand checking. You can't impede their progress. So offensively, you're going to see these type of numbers, especially players who can utilize the dribble in a direct line principle. Russell Westbrook, you're not going to stay in front of Russell Westbrook.
Right.
You're not going to stay in front of Anthony Davis. He's too athletic. He puts the ball on the floor. And for those who have seen him over the years, I mean, he was a 6'2", 6'3 guard and certainly had a growth spurt. So putting the floor and doing what he's doing, for us who've seen him, especially in high school in Chicago, we've known he's always been capable. The big thing, Rick, let's get it back to what this is all about, is winning. What is his impact on winning? Right now, he's 0-3, you know, at the start of the season. impressive individual stats, impressive numbers without, you know, with no doubt. But right now, I'm concerned about what is his impact on winning and what is that going to do as the players around him begin to improve? Because he's going to have to find a way to make an impact without scoring the ball. And that's clearly, he can score with the best of them.
Great point. Another team that lost, and there's a question of where do we put the attribution for that. The Spurs manhandled the Warriors 129-100. Opener at home. After all summer, we're hearing about the Warriors are going to be this unbeatable force. The Spurs came in and spanked them, and they did it in a way that reminded me of what Oklahoma City did and what Cleveland did. And it raises a question about, one, how good are they going to be? And our team's going to be able to use the blueprint that Oklahoma City and Cleveland put out there to beat this Warriors team?
The old Warriors team, that may have held true. This is a new Warriors team. The thing that I find the most intriguing part of the storyline is watching Steve Kerr this year. The adjustments he made from game one to game two, I know Steve. I've been knowing Steve since we were in college playing against each other. Back when he was at Arizona and I was in Iowa. Steve Kerr, I mean, what he was able to do in game two, I don't know if anyone is talking about it, but he's looking for the right combination so that he'll have 10 strong with those four players. And those four players are Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and Kevin Durant. You got to figure out how to have two units with those four players.
Yeah.
I love the fact that he just let that team figure it out in game one. To figure out, are they going to actually go out there and figure it out, or is he going to have to be the one that steps in?
Yeah.
He clearly made that decision that he's going to step in and figure this out for these guys. And I love what he's doing. I love the fact that he's thinking big picture and he's thinking long term with this group. Because if they get together with the right combinations and figuring this out, how they're going to defend first, not score, how they're going to defend first. That's the most important thing with this group. This team is going to be a special team, but clearly they have very capable, high IQ basketball players. And Steve Kerr, I think, has done an incredible job because this is a very difficult thing he's been asked to do, is to incorporate a 30-point plus score into a system that's already high-powered, and how you're going to do it. So I give him all the credit for what he's doing and his coaching staff. I think it's a big task, but I think he's up to it.
All that said, I question, where are you going to be able to put four good defenders on the floor when necessary? Are there four good defenders that you are going to be able to play consistently enough to be able to win once we get to the postseason, when, as we know, the pace slows down and becomes less a scoring affair and more of a struggle below the free throw line?
Well, I want to say something real quick about this. Defense, especially for these guys, is about two things: effort and energy. And if they do that, I think the talent will take care of itself.
Okay, fair enough. Joel Embiid finally made the floor for the Philadelphia 76ers. And we got a glimpse at what the kid is capable of.
Yes.
I would say both good and bad. Now, maybe I'm setting the bar too high, but I'm looking down the road. So we see Embiid play.
Yes.
And we see the talent that he has. And then I'm thinking, okay, but your next step is, this is the guy that you're building around. This is the demeanor. This is your leader, okay? Because look, being the most talented player on the team is a double-edged sword. If you're the most talented player on the team, then you have to have leadership ability. And maybe he gets there, but as I look at him right now, he's a young, fresh colt. I love seeing him play. I think he has some untapped potential, no doubt about it. But I'm still looking at, are you going to build around this kid? And are you going down a road where you're only going to be so good in spite of just how talented he is, if that makes sense?
You know, now with the expansion of the league, you know, when I came into the league, there was like 18 or 20 teams. Now there's 30 teams. When Magic Johnson first came into this league, there was a guy on his team named Kareem Abdul-Jabbar that he was able to learn how to actually accept the responsibility of being that guy. People forget that Michael Jordan, it took him 8 years before he finally won a championship. Now we give these people and players, Joel Embiid, instant, like, he's a star. Well, right. He's got to learn how to be a star. Right now, it is important for Joel Embiid to be an athlete, because that's what he is right now. No one said Joel Embiid is a great player. He can't be a great player. He doesn't have a body of work to be a great player. But right. What he is he is a terrific athlete. Clearly, the game and the speed of the game and athletically is not too fast for him or too athletic for him. And right now, if he can just be an athlete, I think he will has an opportunity to be a special player if he can maintain his health and all those other things. But right now, let him play. Let him be free-spirited. And then once he learns how to play the game, then let's talk about part two of this. What's his impact on winning? Because, Rick, you and I are going to always evaluate the players. What is their impact on winning? The great players do one thing in this league. They win.
Right.
Right now, let's let him be an athlete. And if he continues to grow and develop and do all the other things, then I think that'll be a fair question. But right now, hey, he's free spirit. He shoots threes. He blocks a few shots. He calls himself the process. When he makes a good move, they say he's processing, which I think is terrific. and he does it with a smile on his face, you know? And he's a lot of fun to watch. And I'm sure he's a great interview.
Yeah. And they still haven't won a game.
A movie in the second quarter. Oh, that NBA, was another subliminal diss. There you go with the dissing again.
NBA madness. I'm trying not to be subliminal. I'm trying to be like right out front. I may say it quietly, but I'm not stuttering. The second quarter, let's enter the NBA madness. Dwayne Wade was fined $25,000 in his Bulls regular season debut versus the Celtics. He did the throat slashing gesture, which used to be like everybody was doing it.
Right.
Every time they hit a game-winning shot. Giving it to you, right? And then the league said, ooh, that's not very corporate friendly. That's too ghetto. We can't have that. And Dwayne Wade knew he was getting popped right away. He knew he was going to get the 25 large.
Yes.
He talked to the league. But I'm just wondering, like, for you, because that gesture doesn't offend me. There are other gestures that do. And I'm wondering, what's the worst gesture you've ever seen, or the one that like really it burned you, like you got mad, like you can't don't do that, whether it was to you or to someone else, but it really ticked you off.
Well, you know, there were no fines back then. Guys just said it and they did it, you know. And
yeah.
The thing that bothers me about the fine process, or you know, giving you know Dwayne Wade, is that, you know, we've become sensitive to everything. Like we're offending everyone and everything. And on one hand, I'm aware of it, but on the other hand, it is sports, and you can't take away the aggression that you need to play the game at that level. And it's not a conscious thing where I'm sure he did it and he thought about it. He just did it. You know, it's like one of those things, like you just do the things and you go, you know what? I'm not trying to offend anyone. But when you saw the shot, it was like, that was a great shot. I mean, he finished it. That was a big time shot, especially for him, because he's not a 3-point shooter.
Exactly.
So I'm sure he was as surprised it went in as anyone else. You know?
So, but this is what bothers me. It's very subtle. It's when a dude gets the ball and I check him and he doesn't score. And we come back down again, or say they get an offensive rebound, and he's like, give me the ball again. I'm like, dude, I'm going to stop you again. Like that offends me. Like you think that I was lucky stopping you. That you don't have to say anything. This is
my pet peeve in watching any game. Still to this day, I couldn't stand it when I was playing, and it really irks me now. Guys who talk smack on offense.
Like when they have the ball?
When they have the ball.
Before they've done anything?
No. You get the ball and you like, he can't guard me. He can't guard me.
Oh, yeah. Well, while they're setting up their shot?
Yeah. Okay. I think I can speak for all players here. True players talk smack on defense. You know, but when you're offensively, you can't stop me. You can't. Well, that's only half of the game. Talking on the defensive end. When you can talk smack on the defensive end, you have my attention.
Right.
Because that to me is just hard work. And I was always impressed with players who would talk stuff. Get him the ball so I can play defense against him. That was the most impressive thing to me. You know, you're playing offense, you might get hot that night. But defensively, that's where I want to see the guys talking. So that was always my big thing is, and if you're talking trash, talking on the defensive end.
Yeah. Before we let this go. So we had the throat slash by... We had the throat slash by Reggie back in the day when he was going out with Spike Lee, and or grabbed the neck like you guys choked. we had But then we had the fan in Philadelphia who flipped the double bird at Russ. Like, what among those are you like, that dude, you went too far? Did Reggie go too far? Did the fan go too far? Or do you like, because there's a crazy side of you. I feel like you probably appreciate things that most people would think you don't.
No, I do. And here it is. Talking trash has always been funny to me. Like, it's because that's like my life. Like, anyone that knows me, like, my whole life is just talking trash. From my parents, my mom, my dad, my kids, my wife. That's what we do. You and I, we talk trash. The only thing that bothers me about talking trash is when people get offended. So what the guy did in Philadelphia, I thought was hilarious, but I was like, I didn't like the fact that he did it, because we have a responsibility to the kids and the people who are watching. But it was like, Russell's reaction to me was priceless.
Yeah.
That was the funniest part of the thing. Like, yeah. This guy did it, and then Russell's like,
hey,
did you just see
security?
That?
did you guys catch this? Yeah. No, that was pretty good.
I know, that was funny. It was...
All right. And by the way, you've been talking about subliminal disses. This is a subliminal diss, because we're hitting halftime. I made a suggestion last week about the music that we should play at halftime. And Shane Freeman, our producer, said, oh, yeah, that's really good. I like Anthony Hamilton, too. And then I listened to the podcast, because we lay in the music afterward. And it was your music. Like, it was your choice. Like I don't even have a vote. You guys just okie-doke me in the biggest way. That's a subliminal diss.
You know right what it is? There. You know what it is? This is the NBA. And you know what? The coach called one play, and the players were like, hey, I need that ball. So right now, you know, I'm going to get my shots. And if you have a problem with that, Rick, you got to get your shots. Now, you know, hey, nice guy finished last on the show. So I'm going to get my... Now, what are you going to do? What music you want?
It's halftime. Enjoy the musical selection. I don't know who it is, because I don't get a vote.
Oh, okay.
What are you doing? It's just a halftime. Yes, this is my favorite part of the game.
Greetings, basketball fans. Welcome to the Halftime Break on BJ and Bucher. I'm Shane, and today's Halftime Entertainment is by Eric B. and Rakim and their song, Eric B. is President. It's fitting. Go vote next Tuesday.
I came in the door, I said it before. I never let the mic magnetize me no more, but it's biting me, inviting me to rhyme. I can't hold it back, I'm looking for the line. Taking off my coat, clearing my throat. The rhyme will be kicking in till I hit my last note. My mind remains a fine, all kind of ideas. Self-esteem makes it seem like a thought took years to build, but still say a rhyme after the next one. Prepared, never scared, I'll just press one. And you know that I'm the soloist, so Eric B, make a clap to this. I don't bug out of chill or be acting ill. No tricks in 86, it's time to build. Eric be easy on the cut, no mistakes allowed. Cause to me, MC means move the crowd. I made it easy to dance to this. But can you detect what's coming next from the flex of the wrist? Saying D, then I proceed, cause my man made a mix. If he bleed, he won't need no band-aid to fix his fingertips. So I'm rhyming too, there's no rhymes left. I hurry up because the cut'll make him bleed to death. But he's kicking it, plus it ain't no half-stepping. The party is live, the rhyme can't be kept. Inside of me, erupting just like a volcano. It ain't the everyday style or the same old rhyme, cause I'm better than the rest of them. Every B is on the cut, and my name is Rakim. Go get a girl and get soft and warm. Don't get excited, you've been invited to a quiet storm. But now it's out of hand, cause you told me you hate me. And then you ask, what have I done lately? First you said all you want is love and affection. Let me be your angel and I'll be your protection. Take you out, buy you all kinds of things. I must have got you too hot and burned off your wings. You call the attitude, you need food to eat up. I'm scheming like a demon on the couch with my feet up. You scream I'm lazy, you must be crazy. Thought I was a donut, you tried to glaze me.
Okay. Folks, we return to our regularly scheduled program at this time.
This is quickly becoming one of the most popular parts of the podcast. It's the Q&A, multiple choice, testing the knowledge of BJ versus me when it comes to NBA history and statistics. I believe I'm undefeated. I also believe that I won last week, and I never saw the tweet that you had to put out, which said, I don't know.
Shane didn't give me the tweet, so I'm blaming it on Shane. Oh, you know, I'm blaming it on Shane.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm blaming it on Shane.
It's on the sheet.
And stop giving me the most difficult questions, too.
All right. Well, let's see if you find this.
All right, let's go.
Difficult.
Let's go. Let's get it.
All right. In what arguably is one of the top three NBA playoff performances ever, Magic Johnson had 42 points, 15 rebounds, and 7 assists in Game 6 of the 1980 NBA Finals, overshadowing whose 37-point and 10-rebound performance. I'll give you four choices. This was the 1980 NBA Finals. Jamal Wilkes, teammate. Dr. J, opponent. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, teammate. Or Daryl Dawkins, opponent. Which one? Which one was it? Wilkes, Dr. J, Kareem, or Dawkins?
Okay, couldn't have been Kareem because he didn't play. Daryl Dawkins, no.
So it's down to Wilkes and Dr. J.
You know what? I want to just say just how to... I remember watching that game on a black and white television as a kid. I remember that staying up. It was like... The thing I remember most about that game, it was tape delayed.
Did you have rabbit ears on that TV too?
I did have rabbit ears.
Nice.
It was great. I'm going to say Jamal Wilkes.
Ding, 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 ding. Yes. Congratulations. Can we have a moment of recognition?
Four.
I believe that's the first trivia question that you've gotten right on the show. So congratulations.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Okay.
What do you got for me?
How many NBA MVPs did Larry Bird snag over his career? A,
yep.
One.
Mm-hmm.
B, two.
Mm-hmm.
C, three.
Mm-hmm.
D, four.
I am going to say that he snagged, because I remember when Steve Nash was in the, he was about to win three. He won two. And winning three was going to put him among a very rare company. Now, the question is, was Larry Bird in that company? And I'm going to say, yes, he was. I'm going to say he won three.
Ugh.
Next, this player, this is for BJ. This player, you know, this is like you're like Moses Malone backing your way down to the block. And you shoot and you miss and you get the offensive rebound and you put it back and you miss and you put it rebound and you miss. And it finally goes in. And then I go down the other way and I just like pull up from 19 and just drain it. And we're tied.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is your chance to go ahead again, Moses. This player holds the NBA record for the fastest foul out ever.
Got it? Listen, why would I know something like this, first of all?
Because you might.
Okay.
Because it happened against a team that you're very familiar with.
Okay, go.
Was it Popeye Jones?
Popeye.
Mark Eaton? Bubba Wells?
Bubba.
Or Kwame Brown?
What? No, first of all.
What?
See,
what?
I think Shane purposely does it. Okay. One is Popeye Jones. Two is who?
Mark Eaton, right? Yes.
Three is Bubba Wells, and four is Kwame Brown.
Yes.
The fastest
foul out ever in NBA history.
All right.
What is so hard about this?
I mean, why would I know this?
Like, okay. You know what the best part of this is? The stress you put yourself under.
I do, because it's like, okay, I'm not watching this part of the game. All right, I'm going to say, Bubba would do something like that.
Wow. You're on it, man. You're on it.
I just picked a personality. That was a...
Yeah. Hey. Exactly.
Bubba would do. I could see him doing something like that, just because, you know what, you know.
Wow, those are some bad Dallas teams too.
Oh God, yeah.
The reason that I thought I remembered it is because I want to say Don Nelson was involved. Don Nelson was always doing goofy things like that. It was the 97-98 season or 96-97.
Yeah, I could see him.
Because Don took over in 97-98, and he was either fouling guys out or he would purposely... Like, he started this whole Hack-a-Shack. Nelly was one of the first ones that tried to manipulate the game.
The mad scientist, Don Nelson. All right, Rick, here it is. Here's the one that's going to tie even the score. You'll be tweeting me this week for sure.
Just like you tweeted me last week? Like that?
Yeah.
Like that? Okay.
Just checking. We all know that Shaq and Daryl, Dr. Dunkenstein Dawkins, shattered plenty of glass backboards over their careers.
Yes. Yes.
But what year was the first backboard in NBA history shattered? A, 1968. B, 1969. C, 1976, or D, 1979.
I have no point of reference. You know how you do process elimination?
Let's go. That's my game.
I'm going to say like 68 and 69, they were still using wooden backboards. Okay. So.
All right.
They wouldn't have shattered. They would have splintered. Okay. And 76 or 79... I want to say we start, oh man, 79. You know what? I'm just going to wild guess. I'm going to say 1976.
No!
Yeah. I don't want my tweet without a subliminal diss.
Hey, game recognizes game, Buke.
Which one was it? What was the answer?
The answer is B, 1969. Chuck Connors of the Celtics did it during pregame warm-up.
Wow.
The Celtics.
Okay. Good to know. Well, you know what? I may not have had the answer, but I'm sure that our listeners have learned something. Useless as it may be, they learned something. Don't thank me. Thank our producer, Shane Freeman. All right, this is where we can go almost anywhere. And today we're going to go with the Kardashian influence on NBA players and NBA teams. And we've seen
pop
this.
Pop culture is entering into the podcast.
Yes, it is. Well, you know what? We need to start getting guests. And we'll eliminate this. LeBron James is aware of the impact that the Kardashians have had on, what was it? It was Lamar Odom with the Lakers, James Harden with the Houston Rockets last year, and now supposedly Khloe Kardashian is dating Tristan Thompson. And LeBron allegedly has told Tristan to keep her away from the Cavaliers. Now, I wonder...
Wait a minute.
Because,
keep her away from the Cavaliers or keep her away from Tristan Thompson?
No, he's not telling him where, you know, he can park his car. He's just saying... You can't park it on this street
because
this one's our street.
Okay.
You know, you can go wherever you want.
Okay.
Right? You can, but not here.
Okay.
So my question is, you know, you have the Kardashian curse. I just explained what it is, but what about players telling other players like who they should hang out with? How do you, have you ever experienced that? Tony Braxton was in the midst of that Dallas thing with Jim Jackson and Jason Kidd, which to this day, Jason denies.
Wait a minute. Is this allegedly or are you confirming this as fact?
I'm confirming as fact that he denies it.
All right. Okay.
But my question is, Have you ever experienced anything like that where someone on those Bulls teams, because there was probably a lot of celebrities. I mean, whether it was a chick or whether it was just somebody else, did anybody ever say, hey, we don't want him hanging around the team?
Well, I think, you know, it's pretty funny that the allegedly, I love the allegedly sources. I love those people.
And,
in my own home, there's a somebody that lives in the somebody drink all the milk. These mystery characters, yeah. So I'm sure our listeners have a they or someone or so, you know. The one thing all good teams have in common is whatever's going on outside of the line stays there.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever's going on outside, who you're dating, what you're doing, stays there. I don't know. I haven't heard that. I can't confirm it. But all the good teams have always, they've always had the unique skill set, if you will, is to once they step in between the lines, they're focusing on the team.
Okay.
And I think that is all that matters. But all this stuff, who you're dating, come on.
Okay.
That's ridiculous.
But let's flip this around because we've seen it. Look, I've covered a Washington Wizards team where Rod Strickland went and punched Tracy Murray gave him a black eye.
All the good, I'm going to repeat, were, all the good teams, I'm going to repeat what I said. All the good teams will, once they step inside. Now, if you want to talk about some bad teams, let's talk about them. Come on, let's talk about that.
Okay.
Actually, I played that game, the next game when he did punch him.
Yeah.
That was against us when I was with the Bulls. And it was the greatest game ever. If you go back and look at the film of that game,
yeah,
Rod Strickland and I are talking the whole game. I was like, Rob, what really happened? And Rod's bringing the ball up the court like, hey, man, this is what really happened. And I'm just talking to him as I'm like defending him 94 feet during the middle of the season. It was the greatest game ever. And that happened against us in Chicago when that all went down. I think it was with Tracy Murray. Probably,
yes, it
right?
was. Tracy Murray went to his hotel room. Tracy opened the door. Bam!
You got knocked the fuck out, man!
Hey, man, why y'all didn't help me?
Because they were both getting after the same chick. And Tracy left a message saying, oh, you don't want to mess with Rod. He's a bleep. And the girl, like, let Rod hear the message. So Rod just like,
are you confirmed? Is this allegedly, or are you confirming it?
I was with the Washington Post.
Oh, wow.
I was covering the team at the time. I got it on very good authority.
Oh, you got this all. Very good authority.
Here's the problem. I didn't find out until a week or two afterward, because it was a reference to being a homosexual. That's what he called.
Oh.
And there was another incident with the Washington Redskins at the time that had the same thing that caused a fight on the team. And because it was several weeks afterward, when I kind of got the details and what spurred it and all that, I didn't want to write, like, the team had gotten past it. And I didn't want to conjure that whole thing up again. So I was looking for a way to write about why is that accusation such a hot button,
mm-hmm.
right? But my sports editor at the Washington Post was like, no, you have to write this like it's news today. And I'm like, you don't understand. This is going to kill me with the team. And we're really putting too much emphasis on it now. Like, it's too late. And it wasn't like it was a literal accusation. It was more like your mama, you know, that's what it was about. And that why that had become the new thing that would cause people to fight is what I wanted to look at. And they changed the story on me. And it was one of the reasons why I ultimately, when ESPN called, I Washington off the Post offered me a lot of money to stay. And I thought, you know what, you guys have broken my trust, because you didn't trust that I knew how this story should be played. And I wasn't afraid to report the news, but I also wanted to be sensitive to, like, you have to be aware, like, is it
right
in the context of covering the team? This is my biggest issue with the media today, is that there's no understanding of the impact of what you write or say. And as a result, you become part of the story, or you create stories. That's not what, as a journalist, as a reporter, if you're an opinionist or whatever, that's different.
Right.
But if you're a journalist, your reporting isn't supposed to create new stories or create stories that, like, you uncover stories, you make forward stories, but you don't create whole new issues. And we see that all the time. In fact, it seems to me that media today, they pursue that. Like, if you can throw something out there, even though you know it's not completely accurate or it's outdated or whatever, and you can get a little bit of buzz surrounding you, like, oh yeah, I gotta go do that. That's not the way it used to be.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Bucher, and that was always attracted me to you as a player. You were always true to the story, and you were always true to yourself. And I always respected that about you then and now. So now I always appreciated that about you, Rick, when you were a beat writer in your career as a journalist.
Well, and that's why I appreciate being able to do this podcast with you, because you give us little glimpses into the game and the stuff that was going on that just makes it so rich and makes it so personable. You've been listening to the BJ and Bucher podcast. You want to hear more stories like that, discussion like this? Join us next week. Thanks, BJ.
Thank you.